Hello and welcome to Growth Coaching International's Coaching in Education podcast. I'm your host, Richard Reid, and today's episode, I want to set the scene with a quote from Henry Ford. Coming together is the beginning, keeping together is progress, and working together is success. The Curtin Education Community, CEC, network in South Metropolitan Region of Perth is a conglomerate of 12 government primary schools, 2 secondary schools and 1 senior campus. The CEC's strategic plan 23 to 25 includes 2 targets, one of them being to support a focus on impactful teaching across all CEC schools and the other to increase opportunities to build leadership capacity of current and future leaders. So, what happens when you bring together 26 coaches from across this network of schools, provide them with training, and offer them participation in a year-long coaching program? Well, you get the establishment of the Instructional Coaching Collective. And today, I'm so pleased to be joined on the podcast by Maliva Tubbs, leader of the ICC and program coordinator at Como Secondary School in Perth, Australia. Maliva, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Pleasure. Looking forward to it.
Fantastic. Looking forward to it too. Maliva, could you share maybe a little flavour of your journey through education so far and how you arrived at Como Secondary School?
Yeah, sure. So over the last 34 years, I've taught in a range of secondary schools, international schools and tertiary institutions. So I started out as a health and phys ed teacher with a specialisation in dance, and then after 3 years of working in a government school in Perth in Western Australia, I met a lovely man who would go on to be my husband. And at the time we met, he was headed off to England to start a business, and being young and adventurous, I decided to follow him.
Yes.
Once in the UK, I did some supply teaching and I landed myself 2 really fantastic jobs. One was working in a sixth form college and the other in a technical college in Solihull. When my working visa expired, we returned to Perth where I completed a postgraduate diploma in health promotion. I was then invited by Edith Cowan University, the university that I was studying at, to lecture in this field, where I spent 3 years teaching in a tertiary education setting. So once my tenure at the university finished, my husband and I decided that we needed to change the scenery. And we embarked on an adventure to Bangkok, where I taught phys ed in a British international school.
Wow.
For 3 years. This was actually quite reaffirming because in the school, in Thai culture, teachers are held in really high esteem. So it's a real contrast from my experiences in the Western world. So I really loved that we were valued very, very much in the Thai education system. So after my stint in Bangkok, we then moved to the Gold Coast in Queensland, where I took a job as a lecturer in health promotion at Griffith University. But due to my husband's work commitments, we had to return to Perth, and it was at this time that I was employed by Applecross Senior High School. During my time there, I achieved lead teacher accreditation through the Australian Institute for Teaching and School Leadership. And this actually became the catalyst for me being invited to take on the role of Teaching and Learning Innovations Coordinator at that secondary school. During this time, I worked with graduates to support their journeys in becoming fully registered teachers, and I really enjoyed that role. And this led to me gaining a promotion at Como Secondary College, which is where I am now, and I've been here for the last 8 years. I have an extremely diverse portfolio here, which includes, again, supporting our graduate teachers. It also includes facilitating the school's instructional coaching program, and I'm also the head of learning area of the learning support program. And the program involves specialist teachers and education assistants working with some of our most vulnerable students to support their literacy and numeracy journeys. So that's me and my journey.
Maliva, that's fantastic. I mean, you mentioned the word diverse when you were describing your current role. at Como is very, very diverse. But when I think about when you started out teaching way back in the day, that journey you've come through, I mean, diversity is just running through it. Never mind the level of schools, but also the location, which is which is amazing. A very, very rich and diverse experience. Your CV must be reasonably long if you were to sit down and type it out, which is just terrific. And it's lovely just for our listeners to get with that little bit of context as to who you are and where you've been. So that brings us up, to Como Secondary School, where you are now and have been for the past 8 years. Mm-hmm. As you know, our listeners are very much all about coaching and education. And that's why they're signing in and listening to this. Could you give us some insight into how you became interested in coaching? You know, who or what inspired you to give it a go?
Okay, so I guess my coaching journey began when I started working with graduate teachers, which was about 15 years ago. I have to say I was actually a bit naive when I first started. Although I had really positive intentions, I didn't really possess the skills I needed to have really great in-depth conversations and the skills to collect data to help them inform their teaching goals. And I was kind of thrust into it more than given any training, if you like. So fortunately, at the time, the Department of Education here were offering a program called the Conference Accreditation Training, which is a non-evaluative structured process used to facilitate discussions and high-level feedback on the skills that teachers actually use in their practice.
Okay.
So I completed this training and worked with a conference coach to hone my skills. And this involved observing teachers, scripting the dialogue and actions of the teachers and students. And that was followed by a conference, which involved bringing to a conscious level the skills that the teacher was using in the classroom and to build a common language around that in a really non-judgmental way. So in the beginning, I guess my conversations felt very mechanical and clunky.
Okay.
And some of the conversations I had with teachers were also very short, and I felt that I wasn't really creating opportunities to sort of take a deep dive into their teaching practice. So sometimes I was working with teachers also who I had a limited rapport or hadn't really established a relationship with them, and I felt that the conversations weren't really very authentic, if you like.
Yeah.
So when I moved to Como Secondary College, one of the whole school initiatives was about developing an instructional coaching program here using the growth model.
Yeah.
So the administration team, we organised for Growth Coaching International to come and talk to us and show us what this what was entailed in the growth coaching model.
Yeah,
and they were really impressed by it. So we began a process of peer coaching at the college, and we had an uptake of the peer coaching process, which at the beginning was really positive. And it was successful in some respects, but not so successful in some others.
Yeah.
So some staff were incredibly receptive with working peer to peer, and there were some who just really weren't interested in all and in, you know, opening up their classrooms to other people. So from the feedback that we got from staff, we realised that some of our teachers, whilst having really good intentions, acting as a peer coach, weren't really adept at building that trust that's required in this whole process. So sometimes the coachees themselves really didn't have any idea of what they actually wanted to focus the observation on, and the coach didn't have the skills or the confidence to actually collect the data to help the teacher hit that goal. So the peer coaching process here started to really slowly fizzle out, and so we decided to go back to the drawing board and delve into some research into current evidence-based coaching programs that work.
Yeah.
So we were looking for a program that gave us high-quality coaches with outstanding personal attributes and high-level skills in content and pedagogy.
Yeah.
So we started by recruiting staff within the school who we thought that had these qualities and put them through a quality assurance process. So this involved each coach wearing a coach and a coachee hat and completing 2 impact cycles within 6 months with support from me to support them through that coaching journey.
Yeah.
At this time, coaches were encouraged to use video to reflect on their current reality and the conversations that they were having and the partnership that was involved in working with a peer.
Yeah.
And once that quality assurance process was completed, we then presented to our staff what the actual coaching process looked like and the evidence base behind it. Mm-hmm. And we were actually really delighted because we had an uptake of about 30% of staff within the first week of launching the coaching program here.
Yeah.
And we have 1 in 3 teachers dip in and out of the coaching program at any one time. And we also require our graduate teachers to be involved in the coaching process as well because we know the benefits that that gives to our graduates.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess finally, as a line manager, I also use the partnership principles, which are embedded in the impact cycle.
Yeah.
And I use those to build the relationships I have with the people within my team. So for me, the impact cycle isn't just an instructional coaching model. It's actually an incredibly powerful way of being as a leader, as a peer, as just a good person, and it also really honors the professionalism of the teaching profession. So for me, it's been a really valuable journey, and I've arrived at a position where I'm really happy with the way that I'm coaching at the moment and the way that the people I work with coach as well.
That's lovely to hear. You know, you're at the point now where you're saying, you know, I'm really happy with the way things are at the moment. But also it's very, very helpful for our listeners to hear that at one point, you know, over the last few years, conversations were a bit clunky. You know, conversations weren't working as well as you would like them to work. And, you know, we need to jump in and have a go. But also, you know, there was then that realization that rapport and trust maybe wasn't where it could have been. And that there's a link there between that and maybe the limitations of the conversations, which I think is useful for people to hear. And you mentioned that key word when you talk about the partnership principles, about relationships. And it's so much more than an instructional coaching program. You know, it's about actually building relationships within a school, within any organization, which again, you know, is useful for people to hear. Maliva, in the bio at the start of the podcast, I mentioned the Instructional Coaching Collective. I love that title. Can you tell us a little bit more about what it is? You know, how did it come about, and what really has been its main objective?
Yeah, sure. So you mentioned in the introduction that you talked about the Curtin Education Community Network. So we're currently situated in Perth in Western Australia, and it was formed in 2009, which is quite some time ago, with the purpose of strengthening public education on a local basis with a focus on optimising student outcomes. Also looking at impactful teaching and strong leadership and building on our community relationships and through sharing our expertise, our knowledge, and trying to collaborate at a very high level. So the principals actually steer the work of the Curtin Education Community, and they've developed a strategic plan. So a number of network strategies have been implemented to support these targets, and they've included the training of instructional coaching. So that's where the Instructional Coaching Collective comes in. Yeah. One of the first milestones of the Curtin Education Community Network was to actually identify and train suitable aspirant leaders as the first cohort of instructional coaches. So we organised for the coaches to participate in a 2-day workshop delivered by Growth Coaching International called the Impact Cycle, which centres around the evidence-based coaching model of Jim Knight.
Yeah.
The cohort was actually really inspired by the learning and principles in which the model is embedded and saw the value in sustaining the connection of the group to support its work in meeting the targets of the network. So there was a real desire for that collaboration to keep going, and this led to the establishment of the Instructional Coaching Collective. So you were asking about, you know, what's its main objective. The collection actually aims to embed impactful teaching and build teacher capacity to maximise student outcomes across the state of Western Australia. And we do this using our guiding principles, which have been developed by a steering group, which I'll tell you a little bit about later.
Yeah.
So some of those principles are things like having a deep respect for the teaching profession, having a commitment to the fidelity of Jim Knight's impact cycle, its partnership principles, and the success factors upon which that's based. We also guide our work by the network's strategic priorities. And in order to achieve those aims, we provide our members opportunities to do things like collaborate with other instructional coaches, share ideas, develop resources to support their work, reflect on their coaching practice, participate in professional learning activities to increase their coaching knowledge and expertise, to seek support where they might need it, to lead professional learning opportunities, collect data to measure the impact of the work of the collective, and that data is collected at an individual level for each coach. Mm-hmm. It's collected at a school level, and it's also collected at a network level. Mm-hmm. And I guess really the aim for the collective is to really champion instructional coaching in our schools. And I guess finally, I just really want to acknowledge that the collective just cannot function without the commitment of all the network principals. So we provide support for them to nurture an ongoing culture of coaching within their own schools and across the network as well. So that's really the, in a nutshell, what the Instructional Coaching Collective does.
Yeah, no, that's super helpful, Maliva. And, you know, it's just, we would interview a lot of people where we're talking about an individual school. There's been a few podcasts now over the last couple of years where we have seen that sort of collective model. And I think for some people listening in, you know, that just that extra layer when you bring the word network in, I think is so helpful. And there's just so much potential where there are schools in a geographical area, you know, clustered together, that there's so much potential to sort of say, you know, how can we have a little bit of joined up thinking here and support each other? And that's a lovely link actually into the next question. When it comes to support, because support suggests at times things don't go particularly well. And as you know, Maliva, you know, with all new initiatives, invariably there are going to be barriers and challenges. And that's just the world we live in. You know, I can't begin to imagine the challenge of bringing together this number of schools and educators with a common goal. So what would you say, you know, looking back over the last couple of years, what have been the biggest challenges and how have you tried to address those?
There have been a few. So I guess the first one is about actually getting our principals to understand the work of instructional coaches and the conditions needed for them to do that work. So we started by giving each principal a copy of the Impact Cycle book by Jim Knight, and we gave them a time frame to read this book so that they could understand what it is the coaches were doing and the founding principles upon which that's based. So, and then once they did that, we asked each coach within their school to sit down with their principal and talk about what they actually needed to be successful in that role. And that is actually working really, really well. And I'll go into a little bit about how we encourage our principals to resource the work that we're actually doing. Mm-hmm. Also, bringing all of your principals together within a network is incredibly difficult because they're very busy people.
Yes.
So, and it's really important that they are updated on the work that the network actually does. So, we make sure that the steering group gets to present a quick snippet of the milestones that we achieve at each of these network week meetings. Okay. So we always make sure that this is something that's put on their agenda. So, and they're kept up to date with the work that we're doing. They don't often get to see it. So it's really important that they do.
Okay.
Also, the network didn't really have a clear direction of what the instructional coaching program might actually look like. And from our experience, it's really important that it's overseen by a lead principal who reports back to that network. And we've created a steering group which works closely with that lead principal. And that consists of a very conscientious and collegiate group of school-based coaches. Yeah. And we champion instructional coaches within our schools and then come back and talk to each other about what's happening within our schools.
Mm.
And so the steering group also works really closely with the lead principal and also works really closely with our coaches and coaches as well.
Yeah.
So part of our role of the steering group was to create really clear milestones and KPIs to keep the momentum of the collective actually going. And so we meet on a very regular basis to delegate work that needs to be done. And the lead principal is invited to these steering group meetings so that they're involved as well. And then they report back to the network. We also had a bit of a challenge with coaches feeling disconnected from each other across a network. So it's really important to bring them all together to appreciate that we're all working towards the same goal and that we're all working for something that's bigger than ourselves. That is the improvement in student outcomes.
Yeah.
And we did this by creating bespoke workshops and meet and greet type collaboration meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And we also have coaching champions who ensure that coaches within schools are getting the support that they need as well. So, and it also gives them an avenue to discuss some of the successes, some of the challenges that they might be having in their school, mm-hmm. and allowing for them to debrief and work with a coach as well. So that's been really helpful to get that connection happening for our coaches.
Mm-hmm.
Another challenge we've faced is we've experienced that it's really important to collect data on the effectiveness of coaching, both across each school and also within the schools.
Yeah.
And we think it's crucial because the network principals can then actually see the impact that this coaching is having on teaching practice and student outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
And we've created a range of surveys that principals, coaches, coachees can access electronically, which gives us baseline data and endpoint data to measure the success or not of our coaching program. And these surveys come from the work of Sharon Thomas and Jim Knight, who created evaluation rubrics to assist schools in this measurement. And the data's been really good in helping us confirm whether or not we've actually got the right people in the right roles as coaches. And we've also been able to identify where principals might actually require support. It's also a challenge to collect data from really busy people.
Yes.
And from all of our stakeholders. So I recommend anyone who's going to collect data for those purposes, make it really as easy as possible. So it might be using an online survey or collecting it face-to-face and actually keeping the data collection really short so it's not an onerous task. And I guess the biggest problem for us is actually keeping our instructional coaches. That's been a real challenge because they develop some amazing skills over time and these become highly desirable and sought after by other schools. So they tend to move on to leadership positions, in fact. So yes, I get that's a natural thing for our coaches to leave us. So I would recommend anyone who is going to train instructional coaches within a network, I would recommend coaching more coaches than you need so that when they do move on, you've still got a substantial number of coaches that you can maintain within the network. And I guess the last thing too is financially to run a network of a size, you need resourcing. And this includes funding to release teachers, coaches, to attend workshops, to meet with their coachees. So we know that relief teachers are really hard to come by. They're very expensive. So we've had to plan well in advance to make sure that we actually have that covered so that our coaches can attend professional learning activities and actually just get on with the job of coaching. So
yeah.
they have really been the biggest challenges for us so far.
Yeah, it's that's been really helpful, Maliva, as you talk through those. And I have a long list of things written down on my page here when you've been going through those. But it's really a very, very structured approach. You know, from what I'm picking up on as you go through those various details. But you're talking at the very start about principles being key. The principals of each of those schools really need to be on board. And that's useful, you know, that the coaches within those schools are talking regularly to their principals, which is obviously very, very important. And you mentioned the word milestones, so creating key milestones. But at the same time, yes, whilst you want to reach those milestones, making sure you update the principals and other key people and keep them very much informed. So there's a lead principal in there and the steering group obviously working very closely together. Mm-hmm. And alongside that, the collecting of data is obviously an important element of your work. And one of my favorite words or phrases you've used in there is keep it simple. Because you know, people, yes, I mean, schools are extremely busy places and we can't be adding too much to people's workloads. So keeping that simple is really important. You used a lovely phrase there, an ongoing, I suppose, moderation and our monitoring of things, making sure the right people are in the right roles. And I suppose there needs to be an openness there to potential change. You know, when you commit to a certain number of individuals, you know, there could be changes as you move along that you make, but equally there will inevitably be changes that you can't control. And that's where you train people up. They develop their skills and, you know, they become very much sought after by other schools. And that's just a natural outworking, I think, of the success of the program. But you mentioned, you know, future-proofing and train more coaches than you think you might need. Because inevitably those folks are going to be moving on. So that's been super helpful. Maliva, what would you say then? So looking back over these last couple of years, what would you say then has been really the true impact of the ICC?
Okay. When I read this question, I found this just to be such a great question because I feel it's really important to recognise your successes and what you've achieved, where you started, where you are now. And we're really proud of the work that we've been doing as a collective. And there are a few things that we have achieved. And these are sorts of things that we love to share with our coaches. We love to share it with our principals. We love to share it with the Department of Education who have taken an interest in what we're doing. So there are a number of things. I guess the first thing that we're really taking pride on is creating a best practice model in creating and sustaining an instructional coaching network. And that just hasn't happened by chance. It's happened by, you know, lots of background research and using evidence-based processes to build a really strong coaching network.
We've also, we believe,
created a common language around coaching across the network. And that has been really valuable when our coaches, when our principals come together. That's been really crucial. We've engaged a large number of teachers in impact cycles with a focus on improving student outcomes. And we've been looking at the types of goals or student focus goals, if you like, that teachers have been setting. And some of the, and a lot of them focus on obviously achievement and engagement. And it's been fascinating to see how teachers have improved over the course of the time when we look back at those goals that they've achieved. We also take pride in establishing the first instructional coaching collective of schools in Western Australia. So we started with 3 schools engaging in the program. We now have 10.
Brilliant.
And we're getting some traction with schools developing an instructional playbook, which is essential in the impact cycle. And this has gone from 2 to 4, but we know that that's a very slow process and it's incredibly, it involves a lot of stakeholders to develop an instructional playbook. So we're hoping that, you know, that will improve over time. We're really proud that we now have 30 coaches working with approximately 60 teachers at any one time. And we've also created a Department of Education site, which actually connects all instructional coaches across Western Australia. And that the membership includes our coaches, aspirant leaders, aspirant coaches, coachees, administrators, and even at the Department of Education level, already interested in that work. And so what it does is provides resources to networks and schools to be effective in their instructional coaching programs. So we have resources in there to build steering groups. We have resources in there to strengthen coaching. We have resources in there to help coaches coach other coaches. So there are lots of things, really valuable resources in there. And when we update those resources, we notify our members so that they're, and we try to keep up, you know, with the most up-to-date research. But yeah. I guess the most encouraging evidence that we've had has actually been our work in the research space. So we presented our principles with a recent research project, which was called Evaluating the Impact of a School Network Instructional Coaching Program on the Development of Instructional Leadership Attributes. So as a collective, we applied for a $26,000 grant from the Principals Association Research Fund in Australia. This was to complement the work that we're currently doing to support our instructional coaches to become more effective instructional leaders. So I guess we went to the research first, and the research tells us clearly that instructional leadership in any organisational group serves as the driving force, I guess, behind student success and growth. Yeah. And that instructional leaders, they really do possess a unique set of qualities, if you like, that helps them to guide and empower the people that they kind of work with. So in a school context, your instructional leaders can have a really significant impact on fostering student achievement.
Yeah.
And it tells us that the leadership is greatest when it has a focus on improved teaching and learning. So the research looked to measure the impact of an instructional coaching network program on the acquisition of instructional leadership attributes. So we focused on communication skills as one attribute, and the second attribute was on the content knowledge in pedagogy.
Yeah.
It also has to support the long-term aims of our funding body, which is to provide a best practice model for leaders to demonstrate an impact on their own learning.
Yeah.
So what we hoped that was, and you said this in your introduction, we would put our coaches through a year-long goal-focused instructional coaching program.
Yes.
And by doing so, we hoped that the network's instructional leaders acquire those high-level skills in both of those attributes. The project involved the collective coaches participating in a two-day professional learning course in Jim Knight's Impact Cycle, and that was in late 2022. So all coaches had little or no experience in coaching within any iteration of a coaching model. And this was actually important to ensure that we had a consistent cohort of coaching experience, so we're all on the same sort of playing field. And we use this to establish our baseline data. So early in 2023, we worked with Growth Coaching International to contract them to co-design a bespoke coaching program which ran across the year. And the aim of it was to focus on how inspiring, on how aspiring leaders engage, develop and strengthen those attributes of communication and content knowledge and pedagogy. So the workshops actually encouraged the coaches to take a really deep dive into those skills of coaching. And to supplement that, they engaged in reflective practice with their peers to actually understand their strengths and areas for development within those attributes. So we then paired each coach with a coaching champion for a whole year to identify those goals and to keep them going. In addition, we required each coach to work with a coachee using Knight's Impact Cycle. And in addition to that, we also had to lay the foundation for success by using Jim Knight's 7 success factors. And he has a wonderful text about that. So we had to create opportunities that included things like reviewing the partnership principles as part of the process, the collection of data, focusing on leadership and ensuring that they had system support throughout this whole process. Mm-hmm. So this actually took a lot of work on the part of the principals and the steering group. And we also had to design a rubric in order to measure the success or otherwise of the intervention. Yeah. So we use Knight and Thompson's rubrics for coaches and coaches to evaluate the success of the program, both pre and post intervention. And we were absolutely delighted when the results came through. They were extremely encouraging. So following participation in the program, responses were significantly more positive for both of the attributes of content knowledge in pedagogy and communication skills when you compared those to the responses before we commenced the program. And this was true for both the coach and for the coachee's responses. So ultimately, the data provides really strong evidence that Knight's impact cycle, in combination with a bespoke, goal-focused instructional support program, can actually improve leadership attributes. Yeah. And I just want to add here that the results of the research have actually been crucial in convincing our network principals to continue their financial support of the collective.
Yeah.
And I think it really tells us that participating in an instructional coaching program like this that uses Knight's seven factors for success can actually have a really big impact on these types of attributes. So we're really, really pleased with what we've been able to achieve as a collective.
Yeah, it sounds tremendous and will be a real encouragement to folks who are listening. And at the outset, Maliva, you said, you know, part of what you do and who you are is making time to celebrate success, and it's important to do that. And it's lovely to get to the end of that first sort of cohort and be able to see, you know, the data is there and the evidence is there that this has been impactful. And even that is going to have a positive impact on the principals, because when it comes to future, you know, financing and future commitment, that's a big part of what you're trying to do. And so I also find it really fascinating that, you know, through the podcasting process, when people like yourself come on and actually take a bit of focus time to look at what they've achieved over the last few years, that's a very empowering thing and encouraging thing as well. You know, it's bringing it front and center for you, which I think is beneficial to try and encourage you in your work. So on that note, Maliva, you know, the ICC clearly has had, as we've discussed and you've evidenced there, a major impact on staff and students. What are your thoughts on further developing the initiative in the years ahead?
Well, I guess if we had access to continued funding, if we could sort of wave our magic wand, there are certain things that you would really love to eventuate. So I guess the first thing we'd really love to see is an upscaling of the collective to join with other instructional coaches across other networks in the state of Western Australia. So we're really looking to increase our membership and to really become a hub, if you like, for all of the work that the instructional coach is doing. Coaches do in the state, and how we do that, we're not quite sure yet, but we certainly would like to sort of look into more, you know, leveraging the use of social media to promote the work that the actual collective does. Mm-hmm. For the ongoing work of the collective, it's imperative, obviously, that we source more funding from outside the network of schools to continue the work that we do, and we would also like to continue the work of the research that we're doing, and we'd like to now really look at how instructional coaching directly affects the outcome of students. And we've done a sort of a current, you know, view of the literature, and it is tricky, but we'd love to, because that's ultimately the aim of the collective is to improve student outcomes. So to be able to show that in some way would be really amazing. And we would love for all of our schools to have an instructional playbook. It's something that's incredibly important to the work of our instructional coaches. And I guess we just want to continue. We have a very strong relationship with Growth Coaching International, and we work very closely with them to really create these bespoke tailored programs to fit the needs of our coaches as they evolve over their coaching journey. So as they become better, there's still ways there are still things that we can always improve as a coach. So being able to support that journey, I guess, is something that we'll always be looking to do as long as the collective is in existence, I guess. So, yeah, so that's where I see us going.
Superb. It's lovely to see that genuine enthusiasm to not even just maintain, but to continue to improve. And that has come through very clearly, Maliva, in our conversation today. Listen, it really has been a fascinating conversation today, and I want to thank you for giving up your time to record this episode, especially as it's late on a Friday afternoon with you, and you're likely to be the only person left in the school building at the moment as we speak. You probably are. This episode will really resonate with those listeners who are contemplating reaching out to other schools with a view to collaborating in some way as they develop their coaching work. It's been very encouraging to hear the story of the Instructional Coaching Collective and how you have really capitalised on the collective efforts of so many different schools, and to see the clear impact this is having on developing leader attributes, which has just been superb. For our listeners, can I encourage you to access the latest copy of Growth Coaching International's Insights digital magazine, where we feature an article written by Maliva on this very topic, and where you will also find links to the original research documentation. To subscribe to this free resource, which is published twice yearly, as well as our monthly Coach Ed update, please visit the GCI website homepage, where you will see a link to join the mailing list and have these resources land straight into your mailbox. For now, I've been your host, Richard Reid, and I look forward to joining you all on the next episode of Coaching in Education, where theory and good intentions meet reality.